Many, we'll put this back. We are generally going to go, by the way, Tarubas first. We're going to go Tarubas first, then we're going to do Basar Chalav, then we'll do Shvita and Malifa. That's the way that we're going to go. You get your Fulin requirement here, as I said before. We're going to do 40 dapim, basically, of Fulin in Shir. Always bring a Fulin with you unless we're doing a Avodah Zarah. I was asked already by a gentleman from New England that what you might want to have. You might want to have the Rashba for Fulin, right? If you have very, very generous in-laws, then you should get the Chasam Sofer too, which is fantastic. You want to have the Rashba. And I'm sorry, I know that you all got for your bar mitzvah very beautiful Shulchan Aruch and Tur, but I strongly suggest that you get the one volume edition. You're going to want to mark it up. And two, when I'm giving you places we're reading, because we're going to read a lot together, I'm going to tell you it's on the seventh line on Amud Nun Dalid. And if you have a different edition, if you have the Mikshol Lifnei Iver edition, you're going to be looking and you're not going to be able to find it. Right? So we'll wait for you, but I'm telling you, you'll be a lot more comfortable if you get the one volume. I wouldn't get it for Shvita. You don't need it for Shvita. But I wouldn't get it for Malifa either. I mean, it's nice to have in your library. But you definitely need it for Basar B'Chalav and Tarubas, where we will do a lot of reading of Pri Begadim and Shach and Kavos Das, Rabbi Akiva Eger, et cetera, et cetera. Our derech is to require to accomplish an intimacy with all these poskim. Okay, so since nobody was called, then nobody knew or probably didn't have a chance to prepare today, I'll do most of the reading at the beginning. But I like to have volunteers, and the way that you volunteer generally to read is you have a look in your eye that says, I want to read, and I call it to read. Okay? So please try to stick with me. Okay? In the first parak, are we on? We're rolling here? Okay. In the first parak of Maseches Fulin, the Gemara brings a series of halachas that are mostly related to Shechita, that Rav Yehuda cited in the name of one of his teachers, either Rav or Shmuel. And I can't think of a more appropriate way to begin our investigation of Issur V'Heter, the curriculum par excellence that's defined the preparation for Rabbanus for almost 2,000 years, than with the Maimra that seven lines from the top of Daf Tes Amud Aleph. So if you would, turn with me to Daf Tes Amud Aleph in Fulin. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Kol Tabach She'eino Yodea Hilchos Shechita Asur Lechol Mishchitaso Ve'elu Hein Hilchos Shechita Shehiya, one cannot pause during the act of Shechita. Drasa, pressing the knife through the neck of the behemoth instead of sawing back and forth. Chalada, burrowing like a mole into the area between the two pipes, the trachea and the esophagus, and then cutting from there. Hagrama, which is making the cut in the wrong spot, either above or below on the neck. Or ikor, which is tearing those two pipes with a knife or where that has a nicked blade. Right? So the natural question that we would, of course, ask is, my kamashkala, what does he have to tell us? The Elohein Yochos Shvita, right? Kulhu Taninhu. We're taught each and every one of these halachas, these psulim, and Maaseh Shvita is taught in Mishnayos that are spread throughout the first parak. So why does Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, why does Shmuel say here, you have to know Hilchos Shvita, and these are the halachas of Shvita, right? These are obvious, they're in the Mishnah. Why does Shmuel find it necessary to spell out dinim that are explicitly listed in the Mishnah? So the Gemara answers, lo tmitha, it isn't really necessary, except for one case, sheshachat lefaneinu beza gimel pami v'shachat shapir. We could encounter a shoifet who has successfully and properly shefted two or three times in our presence, and we witnessed that the shechita was kosher each time. So we might think that we could rely on such a person's shechita. Ma'u d'teima, mide'idach shachat shapir, since he shechted those properly,
Hainami shachat shafir. This animal too is shafted properly. Kamashmalan, kevan delo gamar, zimning deshahi v'daris delo yada. Observing somebody correctly performing the act of shechita isn't sufficient because one can unwittingly avoid aveira without realizing it. What makes the realm of Iser v'heter qualitatively different from other realms of halacha we study in our years in yeshiva is that it involves very physical acts and physical objects. The only way that one can perforce avoid prohibited acts is by studying them. So I may know to kill the animal with a knife with a wound in its neck, and I may avoid the five invalid procedures described in the Mishnah without knowing they render the animal nevela. The only way to ensure my compliance with stated halacha is intentional is to know that I studied the requirements. Now, as you purchased your volumes of the Tur Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, the Bach, the Prisha, the Drisha, the Shach, the Taz, the Prima Gadim, Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Havas Das, these are posting who will become Bezos Hashem, your regular partners in Limud Torah in the months ahead, you should have found the assignment to become Morei Hora'ah, I think at once exciting and really a little bit daunting, right? Look how many words there are, how much ink has been spilled on the topic, right? There's so much to learn. As I said before, this is perhaps my 13th or 14th trip through Yerideya, and I still don't know it all. But I'm comforted by the words in the Mechaber in the second Se'if of Yoredei at the beginning of Hilchos Shechita. Ein sarich sheyeda kol chilukei hadini, ela im omer al davarze hayisi mistapek v'shoel karinan bei shapir yodeya ad sheyomar al ha'asur mutar. I'm not required to know all the little particulars of the dinner. But if I know enough to know that there's an inyan that I have a doubt that maybe or not I invalidated the shechita, then I'm shapir yodeya, then I'm called a yodeya. Until I've established that I will say about something that which is usher that it's mutter. So the standard for knowledge at the very beginning of Yoredeya is the awareness of the major issues of Isur HaHeter. To know when a potential source of Isur is in play. Then you're a Yodeya. Ayin Divrei HaShavsham, Sif Katan Tes. It's right in the first Siman in the second Siman. Ilu ba lefanai din zeh, hayisi mistapek bo v'shoel. In the words of the Shach, the standard of knowledge required is to know when to ask a shaila. And you can't know the particulars of everything, but we must know. And that's the example that's given here. The five major psulim for shechita that are described in the Mishnah are the framework which every chacham must know so that he can investigate when a potential source of isur presents itself. So our derech this year will be to acquire an understanding of the basic framework of Iser V'Heter in all its richness so that we may know when an issue comes into play and when one must ask the shaila. Knowledge necessarily requires understanding, the acquisition of a general framework and the rational ordering of the details of its structure. We just did the first little bit of Fuller. Rav Yehuda cites another halachic ruling of Shmuel, and this is the one that's going to get us into our topic for today. Hatabach sarich sheyivdok basimanim lachar shvita. After the shofet shechts the animal, he has to check the simanim, the two pipes. The simanim are the two pipes in the neck of the behemoth, even the neck of a human being as well. The trachea is the one through which the animal breathes, and the esophagus is the one through which food travels to the digestive system.
right? Bilshon Chachamim, the Kaneh, right, and the Veshet. You should be familiar with those terms, right? Because the procedure for Haseba on Leila Seder, we recline in such a way that we're not makdiming the Kaneh Leveshet, so that we don't recline in such a way so the food goes down the wrong pipe and we choke. Rachmana Litzlan. The Heimlich maneuver, right, something everyone should know, I guess, is designed to push air through the trachea if something's caught there and prevents breathing. Right? So these are the simanim, which must be cut most of the way through during Shvita. Right? We'll come back to this when we get to Shvita, but it's good to have a little background. So Agav Orpah, let's note while we're on the topic, the difference between an oaf and a behema, because it's going to come out in the Rashba that we're going to look at today. The first Mishnah in the second parak, let's just turn for a second, Dafaf Zayin Amud Aleph. Hashoche Echad Ba'of Ushnayim Ba'behema Shechitaso Ksheira. Shefting a chicken is much easier than a behema, besides the fact that it's smaller, since only one of the pipes needs to be cut, either the Kaneh or the Vesha. The Gemara discusses there whether this is the Hakila or just the Dieva. Ein Kan Makom Laharik, we'll come back to this. The Tabach Shmuel ruled must check the two pipes after Shechita to confirm that the minimal requirement was fulfilled, namely that he cut through both of them more than halfway through. You have to cut more than a rove. Rav Yosef notes that we can see an indirect reference to this requirement in a Mishnah in Perek Sheni. So let's flip to Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph toward the top. Let's get a little run through Shvita here for background for our sugya on Daf Test. See the Mishnah there? Nafla Sakin Vihigviha. As the Shofet prepared to finish the Shvita, the knife slipped from his hand. He grabbed it and he finished the cut. Picked it up and he finished the cut. So there was a pause between two parts of the cutting while he retrieved the knife. Or even more embarrassing, Naflu Kalo Vihigviha. His pants fell down while he was shefting. So he stopped to pick up his clothes, right? And he finished, and then he finished the shechita, right? So in the middle of the act, his pants fall down, he stops to raise them, then completes the act of shechita. So what's the problem here? So the first of psulim that I told you about was shehiya, stopping in the middle of shechita. You're not allowed to stop in the middle of shechita. Or how about if he tires in the middle? And he can't complete the cut. He shchiz as a sakin, the ah. He sharpened the knife, which so fatigued him that he couldn't finish the job. He had to rely on another. If he stops for any reason, fatigued, to sharpen the knife, to lift up his pants, to retrieve a fallen knife, there's a potential problem of shahiyah. So here, by the way, we can see the point of the first siman of Yeridah from which we quoted before. One wouldn't know even to ask to be mistapeh unless one knew there was an inyan of shehiyah b'shvita, right? You have to know that there's such a requirement, right? And normally, okay, you did the act. I started doing the nanuim. I stopped, I sneezed, and then I continued doing the nanuim. You wouldn't think that there's a problem. So, you know you have to cut two simani, right, in the neck of the animal. You did it, but you stopped for a minute. You might not know, so therefore you need to know to ask a question. Then you can ask the question, how long did he stop for? Or if it's the onus or something, then at least you know that there's an injury. Okay? So what's the length of time then that constitutes a break? So here the Tanakhama says, Im Shaha Kidei Shchita Psula. Right? If the pause was long enough to have done the entire act, then we cannot consider the two halves of the cutting to be part of the same Misa, right? Rabbi Shimon offers a different shiur, though. Rabbi Shimon says here, and this is the one that's quoted in our sugya back on Daf Test. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Im Shaha Kidei Bikur. if now bikur levakir, it's not levakir chola for to visit some friend. It's to like I like from the Hebrew word bikoret, the modern Hebrew criticism. It's to examine, right? It's levakir to examine. So here kidei bikur, Rav Yosef sees in the words of Rabbi Shimon an indirect reference to the requirement to inspect the shechita after completion to ensure that the two simanim had indeed been cut through. Okay, so let's go back to Daf Tes now, and we'll see. Amar Rav Yosef. Af anin nami tenena. We also learned this in the Mishnah. Now, actually, af anin nami tenena, what kind of force is that? It couldn't be that he's just going to quote it's befeirish in the Mishnah. Because then why would an Amora have to say something that was in the Mishnah? Even though sometimes Rav and Shmuel in the first generation of Amoraim, they function sometimes like tenena. Okay? Sometimes Gemara will say, Rav tanahu pali. He can be holik when a Mishnah or a Bryson. Right? Rav and Shmuel are sort of the swing generation. You know, the way things happen, you must have heard this in your secular classes, there's a concept in modern scholarship called periodization. It doesn't suddenly happen that they announce, in 5 minutes, the Enlightenment is beginning, right? Or, you know, so it doesn't suddenly happen as a Basco, and they announce, oh, we're now out of the Dark Ages, right? And it doesn't work that way. So there's always sort of periodization. There's always a question as to when a particular period starts. So when we say that Ravina and Rav Ashi are so pora, right? So there are some Amoraim from their generation that are concluded and some that aren't. It wasn't that all of a sudden somebody came out and said, okay, say all the maimers of halakha that you want to say. From this point on, no more halakha, right? No more maimers of halakha. It's so pora. It didn't happen that way. Right? Same way that it didn't suddenly happen, okay, the era of Tanaim is ending in 11 minutes, say all the Mishnayos and Brises that you want to say, because now from now on everybody's in the Mora. So Rav and Shmuel are in what I call the swing generation, and that's why the Gemara sometimes say, Rav Tanahu Pali, even though he's called in the Mora, he's called the first of the Amorai. Okay? So here was the Zafan and Nani Tanene. It can't be that he, Shmuel, is saying something that was in a Mishnah. He knew the Mishnah. If I know the Mishnah, Shmuel knows the Mishnah. So Shmuel, Afan and Namite, what Rav Yosef is saying is that you can see an indirect reference to the requirement to inspect the Shechita after completion to ensure that the two simanim had indeed be cut through. Right? Because Rabbi Shimon said, if you were Shahab Kidei Bikur, right? Must be an Indian of Bikur. Must have to examine. He said, if you waited enough, the amount of time it takes to be Mavakir, to inspect the two simanim, right? So it must be that there's such an inyan, right? The Gemara says, to which bikur does Rabbi Shimon refer? Read with me. My lav, kidei bikur simanim. Surely Rabbi Shimon's defining the perek zman, the amount of time of shia that invalidates shechita as the amount of time it takes to check the pipes. So what does this prove? So I am Peirush Rashi here, Dibur Maskia. Lav kidei bikur simanim. Alma Yeshbahen Torah Bikur. The Simani must require inspection. Otherwise, why refer to the shear? To it as the shear. If nobody does it, how would anybody know how long it takes? So we thus have an indirect support for Shmuel's halacha from the Mishnah. Okay? So again, the force of Afan and Nami Teni is not to say that Shmuel merely repeated something explicit in the Mishnah. If that were the case, we'd be asking Akasha not bringing this support. The force here is that we ourselves refer to this requirement in the Mishnah. Shmuel and Amora ruled so explicitly, Rav Yosef comments, that Shmuel's ruling has support in the Mishnah. Okay, no big gymnastics so far, pretty straightforward, right? Okay. Now, Abaye rejects Rav Yosef's contention. We'll do a little thinking in a minute, but let's make a little ground here. That Rabbi Shimon is referring to the inspection of the Simani. Normally, I won't lecture like this because you will have prepared the Gemara. But since you didn't, I'm going to take you through it, okay? Amar le Abaye, lo, hachi amar Rabbi Yochanan, kidei bikur chacha. Rabbi Yochanan explicitly said that the shiur of shehiyah is kidei bikur chacha. the amount of time it takes a chacham to check something. Now, obviously, we're talking about inspection of the knife and not the shechita itself. The tabak would neither drag the behemoth to the chacham or schlep the chacham to come see the behemoth. There's nothing to see that the tabak himself couldn't see. The knife, though, is another matter. It's very complicated halachas as to what kind of nicks disqualify it. Realize also, of course, that Rabbi Yochanan is explaining the words of Rabbi Shimon, right? Rabbi Shimon said, Kedei Bikur. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what Bikur are we talking about? Kedei Bikur Chacham. Full stop. He says, Kedei Bikur, full stop. Abaye tells Rabbi Yosef, the Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of Rabbi Shimon is inconsistent with his usage as a proof for Shmuel. So we have no proof for Shmuel. Then the Gemara questions Rabbi Shimon's Rabbi Yochanan's formulation of Rabbi Shimon, because it appears to violate the dictates of good psak. In Cain, Nasata Devarecha L'Shi'uri. The amount of time that it takes to find a chacham to inspect the knife is dependent on a lot of factors, and it's not a single shiur. It's a chacham local. What are his visiting hours? How far away does he live? You have to go through people to get to him. This makes a very big difference for how long it would take. It doesn't seem likely that Rabbi Shimon defined the shiur of Shehiyah by such an inabsolute standard. Why did they give shiurim? People weren't walking around with digital watches in those days. So they tell you how to figure out when the last time for eating chometz is. And they have to extend it because it's not so clear as to where the sun is in the sky. Right? So they give you, how do you know when the mishmaros change in the first parak of brachos, right? People didn't have digital chronometers. So what they did is they gave them things that they could look at so they would know when it would be what the shiur is. So here, he gave the shiur kedei bikur. Rabbi Yochanan explained it. He said kedei bikur chacham. But the Gemara says it can't be the time that it takes to get a chacham to check the knife. Nevertheless, that's what Rabbi Yochanan said. So he must have meant something logical, so the Gemara revises it. We're still talking about inspection of the knife. What Rabbi Yochanan meant, though, is where the tabak himself is the local chacham. Let's read his words. Ela kedei bikur tabak chacham. The amount to where the butcher inspects his own knife. That's cute, right? But it's more than cute. It's actually quite logical. All the Gemara is doing, it's not as forced as it may seem. What we mean is that the shiur is the amount of time to inspect the knife and nothing else. The Gemara offers a practical case where that would be the only possibility, where the chacham is doing his own shefting, so he just inspects his own knife, right? Makes sense, okay? That Rabbi Yochanan intended the shorter period without the inabsolute shiur making one's way to the chacham, it's not so unlikely. So we have then no reference to the ruling of Shmuel that the tabak must check the simonim after shechita in the Mishnah and Daf Lamed Beis. The ruling, however, that's very important, this shock libertarius, so what, do we hold like Shmuel? We don't hold like Shmuel. Just because they rejected Rav Yosef, the first thing we have to learn, just because they rejected Rav Yosef's proof doesn't mean that we rejected Shmuel. All we did is reject the dialectic discussion of Shmuel, that's all. Shmuel still stands, as you can see from the rest of the Gemara. Right? So when somebody, and that's a terrible, one thing we have to remember in halacha, we've never been sensitive, probably, to psak from the Gemara. Right, from learning a sugya and then trying to abstract from there, you learn the sugya and then try to figure out what the halacha is in the sugya. So a lot of times you read the Shach Levitari and say, oh, so they reject Rav Yosef, so it must be Shmuel's not in play. No, Shmuel's still in play. He's still a halacha. Just they reject Rav Yosef. Shmuel's not responsible for Rav Yosef's siyuah. He said what he said. Shmuel is a great authority in Issa B'Hetter, okay? Only surpassed by Rav. Another great authority in Issa B'Hetter is Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to see. Gemara always takes those particular opinions very, very seriously. Okay? Gemara even offers a klal. Yochasa k'rav b'isurei. We follow Rav in Issa B'Hetter. Okay? Now, this ruling stands alone, has nothing, it's not affected by the fact that we just rejected the shear, the proof that we tried to bring from that Mishnah. And now the Gemara launches a discussion of it that's going to take us into the heart of the topic today, which is chazakah, which will lead us to rov. Okay? Here's where we're headed. Principle of chazakah, principle of rov, then ta'am, then flavor. Okay? After we have that, we have the general framework for all of Isur HaHeter. Everything else is just a list of exceptions. Okay? So that's where we're headed. God willing, by the time we by the time you're in your sukkah, right, we'll already have the general framework for all of Tarubas. And by the way, that's why I do Tarubas first. Because Tarubas is the general case and Basar Kahala is the specific case. Shulchan Aruch and the tour, this follows the tour. The tour does Basar Kahala first. Right? But every time I've learned it, first time I didn't. Merkaz HaRav, I learned it the other way because it just followed the Siman. If you need to learn on their own, when I, for the Rabban and speaker. Nobody told me, so I was doing it the first time. I did Basar Kahala first. I learned what a huge mistake that is. You need to do Taruba first, understand the concepts, and then we come to Basar Kahala. Okay, now. Now the Gemara asks, Lo Badak Mai. And now really, try to crank it up and stick with me. Okay? I know this is awful, just listening to me like rant at you, but you didn't have a chance to look at it. So everybody pretty much with me though so far? Okay? You follow the flow of the sugya? Alright? Gemara asks, Lo Badak Mai. What happens if the Tabach didn't inspect the Simanim after cutting them to see that he cut through a majority of both of them? He chopped up the behemoth into steaks. They sold it. They washed it. They salted it. They cooked it. And then all of a sudden, you're sitting at the table and you invited the tabach for suda. And the tabach says, and he said, "Gee, I knew we can rely on you. You're such a firm guy. We know that you ensured that the simanim were all, you know, shechted through." Simanim? I never heard of that. What are you talking about, simanim? I never cut through the simanim. Question is, I think I did. Oh, no. He says, "I'm sorry." No, he says, "I cut through the simanim." Oh, you checked it, right? Why should I check it? I know I always did. Right? So, lo badak mai. He didn't follow Shmuel's halacha. So he's not really sure, we're not really sure whether or not, and he's not there to ask. Let's even make it better. He's not there to ask, so we can't be mevarech. As a matter of fact, I should say it that way, because we are going to discuss whether or not when we rely on a chazaka, when we have the ability to clarify the situation ourselves, when we have the ability to be mevarech, okay? That's going to be a big topic for us. Okay? So what happens, lo badak mai? Rabbi Eliezer ben Atignus, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanai Amar, Trefa v'asura v'achila. The meat of an animal that was shefted but not inspected for the requiring severing of its pipes is besar trefa, the meat of a trefa animal. It's forbidden for eating. Now this is pretty confusing. Because the actual definition of a trefa is an animal that has a life-threatening defect that will likely result in its death within the next 12 months. And we use the word trefa very inexactly. We say, oh, it's trefa, it's not kosher. Right? No. Okay. Trefa is a specific condition. It's an animal that has a physical defect that will most probably lead it to die. Okay. Even if we shecht such an animal properly, it can't be eaten. Now, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yanai, obviously can't mean that the animal suddenly becomes a trefa by virtue of the fact that it was possibly shechted shaloka halacha. We didn't check the simanim, right? I can't make it a trefa. It's not going to make it, you know, a sickly animal. The condition of being a trefa is a physical condition in the animal or a bird's body with which you're born or contracted later. It's not a result of being improperly shechted. So what Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanni must mean is that the animal al pi halacha is treated like a trefa. What's the other possibility? The one proposed in the Brisa, quoted by the Gemara next. The masnisa tanin nevela umitama b'masa. Generally, an animal that's not properly shechted is defined as nevela. That's what nevela is. Okay? The major difference between nevela and trefa is that a nevela is an av hatuma. Yes, this animal may now be nevela because of the two simanim,
were possibly not cut. But Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yanai, doesn't go as far as the Braisa and also ascribes with Av Hatuma. So the obvious question is, what underlies the difference in halakhic treatment of meat whose simanim were not inspected post Shechita? Why does one authority treat it as treifa with just an Isur Achila, while the other treats it as full-blown nevela with the status of an Av Hatuma? That's the Gemara's question. I actually think probably it's good that I did this, because if you're not familiar with this, it's got a lot of categories, tumah and whatever you might not have been so familiar with. Okay. So the Gemara asks, b'may kamitzligay, what do they have a machlokas in? What's the conceptual basis or source basis? Did the Rav Huna, this is our major mimer here, their difference of opinion relates to Rav Huna, the Amar, behema b'chayeha, Bechezkas Isur Omedes Achi Yivadalacha Bameh Nishpata. Since an animal while alive, Rahuna said, is in a state of Isur, it remains so until one knows for certain that it's been shefted properly. Here we don't know whether or not the Tabach cut through a majority of each to see money. Right? So it remains. Nishpata, if it was shefted, Harehi becheskas heter ad sheyivadalecha b'men nitrufa. And then we don't assume that if it was shefted properly, we don't assume that there's anything wrong with it until you can bring us a reason why it is. And what does chazaka mean? In very simple terms, chazaka is the law, one of Galileo's law of motion. An object in Isur tends to remain Isur until we have a reason to render it heter. An object that is usser, that is mutter until we have a reason to render it usser. Okay? Big machlokas between my sister and the Shulchan Aruch and the halacha. Okay? For her, everything is usser unless proven otherwise. Chazaka says we leave everything in its presumptive state. What does that mean? Okay. Tough concept. But it's going to be basic. It's going to show its head again. It's going to rear its ugly head at the end of Taruvos when we talk about Sveik Sveika and the most complicated in Yonim that have captivated the yeshivish world in the 20th and until our very day. 20th century until our very day. Subject of the Shav Shmaisa, of the Kovet Shirim, is a Shari Yosher, famous books that I'm sure you've heard of, which we'll have an opportunity with God's help to look into. Mar Savar, Bechezkat Iser Kaima, Behashta Mesahi. Mar Savar, Bechezkat Iser Amrina, Bechezkat Tuma Lo Amrina. Try to get our minds around this. This is Givaldic, but it's tough. Bad teaching, by the way. As you can see, I didn't go to Azrieli. Never tell people it's tough. Right? I'm sure it's a very bad pedagogic thing. But this is a little bit hard. Okay? It can, but it's worth it. Believe me, it's worth it to get this this reasoning will raise your IQ. The master is so good, your IQ will undoubtedly rise by 7 to 9 points. That I guarantee. Okay? At least how I measure. The conceptual basis of Rav Huna's ruling is that we don't assume a change in the underlying metzias until we have a reason to do so. Until we know that the behema was shechted to halacha, we can't assume otherwise, right? We can't assume that it was, and we presume the animal to be in the same halachic state as we last knew it to be. So one big question leaps out at us. But there's been an intervening act that we know has changed the facts on the ground, as Donald Rumsfeld said. The animal's dead, slaughtered, right? So how can you leave it the way it was when it was alive? It's now dead. It started out alive and now it's dead, right? It's not breathing. It's got blood running from its neck, right? Okay? It kicked in the death throes, which we're going to learn about in Shechita, and the animal's dead now. You call the animal by name, it doesn't respond. Its tail ain't wagging. Okay?
So how can you say that it remains in the same chazaka, the same presumptive state of what it was when it was alive? We'll come back to this, to which Easter we're actually talking about here in a few minutes. But for now, let's just simply say this. We know the animal's dead, and we don't know whether it was shefted to halacha. So mar savar becheskas isur kaima. It remains, it started out as isur, and now it's dead. There's no reason to assume kosher shechita without any other information. So what we're presented with is a dead animal that was already us. Okay? The fact that we see it was slaughtered in some way doesn't give us enough of a reason to change its legal status, and so we consider it still usur. We can't assume that the two pipes were cut until we see that they were cut. That's why Shmuel says, Hatavach Tzarich, and that's why it was explained, that this is Nevela. The fact it's dead, and until we hear otherwise, concerning Shechita, we must presume it's an animal without proper Shechita, meaning it's Nevela, and therefore it's Mitama B'masa, and that's the way the Brisa learns. Umar Savar, the Chezkas Yisra Amrina, the Chezkas Tuma, Lo Amrina. Yes, the animal started out as Yisra, and we need information to alter that state. In the absence of such information, we don't presume it's Mutter. We leave it in the halakhic state in which it began. That halakhic state might be as Yisra, but it doesn't entail Tuma. It was never Tame before. Why add an Isur of Tuma? So Rabbi Elazar Rabiana. Yes, it's treif. I'm not going to allow you to eat it. But it didn't. It never was. To go the extra step and ascribe to it Tuma, I'm not going to. To make it an Avatuma, I'm not going to. Because it didn't start out as an Avatuma. Okay? Yes?
What would he call this animal now?
He'll call it a presumptive Nevela, but he won't give it. He calls it trefa because it shares the same din as trefa. But just because something shares a din with something doesn't mean that they're identical, that they have the same thing. So in other words, I could say, let me take an example out of the blue. I could say that a woman reading ksuba is like a monkey reading ksuba. I could say that, right? Okay? I don't mean that women are monkeys. I'm Ben Torah. I know that. I'm just trying to say that it has the same din. That's all. Gemara says that, right? Ah, but if you come from Eidah and you read and you're an Orthodox Jewish intellectual, who I happen to know who said that because he's a very good friend of mine, and if you say, oh my God, this is a terrible thing that Rav Schefter said. No, Rav Schefter assumed something incorrectly. Rav Schefter was foolish. He assumed that you were a Ben Torah and you understood halakhic language, right? Just because you say that a katan and an eved and a woman and a goy might have the same, requirement, the same doesn't mean that you're ascribing them the same social standing, right? In any way possible. I mean, that's, we knew this in eighth grade, right? You don't have to be on the eighth editorial board to know that, right? Okay, you don't have to be an intellectual to know that. Okay. Anyway. I know I would say things that I regret because it wound up on the website, Okay. Anyway, looks like I will not be invited to participate in the terrible. Okay. Now, it still doesn't hold together, though, does it? Okay. We've still got some work to do. Let's first hone in on the state of Easter in which we presume the meat remains. We asked the question before. Yes, the meat started out its existence as Easter, but something did happen to alter its condition. Why consider it Nevela? Why not consider it Nevela, right? That's really what's behind your question, right? Let's work on that a little bit, because I'm trying to restate what I think you were really asking. By the way, what's your name? Ayin Perish Rashi Dibra Masfil Behema Bechayeha Bechezkas Yisur. Okay? You see it there? Matter of fact, since you asked the question, I have noticed you. Mm-hmm. Shehare Asura Mishum Avram Yinachai. Everybody see it? This is the obvious first choice, right? It's temporarily prior, right? In touch prior in time to any other Esau. It's the first Esau that appears in an animal. And hence it's logically prior as well. It's the first one we would suggest, right? Started out as Avram Yinachai, right? What do I mean by that? It's the Esau that inheres in every living creature when it's first born. Okay? Furthermore, Rashi closely fits Rav Huna's language here. Behema bechayeho, right? An animal while still alive, beheskas Esau medes. An animal while still alive remains in a presumptive state of Esau. So what's the Esau that's applicable to a living animal? Bechayeho. Heve omer, Avram Yinachai, right? Okay? That's the Esau according to Rashi.
Well, wouldn't Treif also, but if it's alive, so the Esau could also be a Treif, because it could be alive
too.
That year.
It could be. It could be.
I mean, Rashi, I know, understandably, right. Wouldn't read it as such, but it possibly right. Could exist.
Right. But I could, yes, it could be.
You wouldn't have, no, well.
Oh, no, but if, why would we presume that it's Treif? Here we're going to throw in another, we're going to throw in another concept, and we're going to be unfair here. Rove behemoths are not Treif.
Well, right.
Okay? So, they didn't assume, you know, and they didn't make it, you know, a statistical study, but their experience was, at a population sample, that most animals were not Treif. It's very hard to find. Most animals were healthy, all-American, bush-voting animals. Okay? All right. But something did happen to the animal, Simon's question. Before it was breathing, and now its neck is severed, and it's lying there dead. I'm not a vegan, so it's a body. And there's no mystery what happened. This tabach shechted it. It's so certainly no longer in the same presumptive state. It's dead, for God's sake, right? Rashi may fit Rav Huna's language from a philological perspective, but he suffers from a dialectical perspective. That's very fancy language for saying it doesn't make sense. Okay? So now let's look in here's the Rashbuck, everybody. Pass me back the extras, will you? Or if you know anybody that's not here that's going to be here, so you can take one of them. Everybody okay? Everybody with me so far? Okay? You can stop me at any point. Please don't suffer quietly on my behalf. Okay? Amud Nun Dalid, seven lines from the bottom. Okay? Seven lines from the bottom. The Efshar Lefaresh Bechezkas Iser Avram Yinachai Omedes. The Keva Denishchata Bein Shchitas Malisa Bein Shchitas Miyut Simonim Hare Yatsa Lame Iser Avram Yinachai. The animal cannot be in a presumptive state of Avram Yinachai. It's not high. The animal's dead. We need a presumptive state, Rashba says, that adhered before the animal died and still pertains until we know the animal was properly shechted. Right? See his question? Okay? Can't be Avram Yinachai. So let's circle back six lines in the Rashba now and see what he suggests. I want to reject Rashi first, and then we'll read what he suggests. Okay? Behema bechayeha bechezkas yisur. Klomar. Bechezkas Iser She'eina Zvucha Omedes. It's in a presumptive state of being not shechted properly. That's pretty good. Derachmana Amar, the Torah tells us, V'zavachta v'achalta, Shelo tochal basar elin kein yishvata yafeh, B'shnayim o berov shnayim, U'v'ov b'achad o berubo. You know those denim because I mentioned them already. The ad shalono dalecha shiatami de yisura b'shchitasa malisa. Why you until you know that it stopped being usher because it was shechted properly, it still remains in that first isur. Every animal starts out, even if it's a pet, as a non-shechted animal. You can't eat your pet cow play with it and rip, you rip off a limb or throw it in the pot, right? Not just because Abram made a fight, because you didn't sheft it. Yes.
Why would that be the case? How would that be the case if we assume that the shochet is a good shochet? Meaning, the chances are he's not going to make that, you know, 900 out of 10, he's not going to make that mistake. Once, because we already said he's, you know, we did make the assumption that we already had to check the shochet. So if we already had to check the shochet, why should we assume that the he's going to mess up? If the shochet already knows what he's
because doing. There are only two infallible people in the entire world. And I think you may remember who they are. My wife and her mother. Everybody else makes mistakes.
Fortunately, that contradicts with some other people's world.
Everybody else can be wrong. Only people that I've never found to be wrong, that I've admitted to be wrong, my wife and her mother.
I understand that, but my question really would boil down to is why should this Isser be more likely than the Abram and Achai problem?
Okay, Ein Kai Makom L'Harif, we will see it. Okay? We will see it. But obviously, it's it takes some kind of skill to cut through the sea money, right? And I don't want to give some kind of historical or empirical or whatever. I want to give a svaradik, you know, whatever. So let's just say, Ein Kai Makom L'Harif, it's something that Shmuel was worried about. Okay? This is very logical, right? The animal starts out in a presumptive state of not being shechted, right? Not being shechted kind of law. Okay? It's very logical, but not what I would have thought of. Right, I would have thought of Abram and Achai first. The animal starts out unshechted kehalacha, and until we know definitely otherwise, remains in a presumptive state of being unshechted kehalacha. Now, both of these deos have what Rav Schefter refers to as a svara chitzona, an exogenous hypothesis, an underlying idea that they both accept that isn't explicit in the text. A hypothesis that we assume, and which then leads us to interpret as we do. The presumptive state, here's the svara, has to be about a specific isur. Right? How about just saying it was in a state of being usur? For whatever reason, the animal started out as Abram and Achai, and then it bowed dead, and it's possibly nevela. It was usur all the time. I need a reason to change it from being usur. Why does it have to be the same isur? Right? So the svara chitzona for both Rashi and the Rashba here is it has to be the same specific isur that it was muhzah. It can't just be that it was usur. It has to be that it was usur mishum zeh. And therefore, Rashba rejects Rashi, or at least the way he reads Rashi. Read Rashi later, you can see Rashi probably agrees with the Rashba too. Right? But it's a Rashba straw man, so to speak. Okay? For Rashi, at least how we first read him, it's Abram and Achai. For the Rashba, it's broader, but it's still a specific condition. The Chezkas Eina Zvucha. Sasha?
Can you just clarify that one more time?
Yeah. Okay? So here's what I mean. Both of them said, why not just say that if an animal that starts out Usser, I need a specific reason to say that it's Mutter. It's Muchzak is Iser. Okay, up to now it was Abram and Achai. Now I see it's dead, it's not shechted, but it never at any one time stopped being Iser. Right? It was Abram and Achai until it died. And then, now it's why not just say it moved from one Iser to another, but it still remained Iser. So they both assume that it has to be a single Iser, that it's Musa. Right? That's what I call the Svara Chitzona, the underlying, you know, hypothesis that's outside of the sugya that they start the sugya with in their minds. You see how it motivates both? Okay? It's a good brisker term,
Sparta Pizzola. Can I try to clarify this one?
Sure, absolutely.
So, are we saying that the Rashba has to reject Abram and Achai because there would have been a changed stat, there would have been a changed
it's no longer Chai.
Right, because no longer Chai, so you would have had to say there was another Isser involved.
Right.
So he says, why don't I just say that from the beginning? So he's
right.
Kind of saying, why not just say
right.
That from the beginning?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. But look, he comes close to advocating a general presumptive state of Esor, because he suggested defense for Rashi, you know, I think in the last four lines of the selection, and this I don't know how to have it. Umihu, eino koshe kol kach,
The Efshar Lomar, the Kaven the Mei Kara, Beheskas Isarina Chayo Medes, Vakshav Nami Loni Sparer, Im Mishkata Kehogen, Hai Hi Muzeket Me Isar Isar. Right? An object that started as Isar and then evolved into another Isar requires specific information to change its presumptive state to Heter. In the terminology used by the Rashba here, something can be Muchzak May Iser the Iser. It doesn't have to be the single Iser, right? That's how he defends Rashi. The specific Iser applicable may change, but the Chetzah has an unbroken record of being Chetzah the Iser, just for different reasons. Okay? Which is more like what I think you would have suggested, right? Okay? Just say yes.
Okay? It's not that the same. Once we're talking about one Chazak going to another,
it's the same chazaka, he's saying. It's the chazaka that it was Aser. It could be for different reasons. Okay? But it's the same chazaka. Okay? Now, what's the nature of this presumption? This Hezkas Iser, in which we presume the animal remains until we know otherwise. Is it related to the other variety of presumptions we find throughout Shas, which seem much more straightforward? For instance, Chazaka Ein Adam Me'iz Bifnei Bachova. We presume that a person who denies that he owes any money at all need not make a shvua that such is the case. Chazaka Ein Isha Me'iz Bifnei Bachova. We may presume that a woman who claims in front of her husband that he divorced her would not brazenly lie if she knows that he knows otherwise. Okay? The Chasam Sofer calls the chazaka of legal presumption, the way I define it, obviously, Chezkas Amitah. It's powerful indeed. For Rabbi Yochanan actually rules that executions by Skila and Srefa were performed on the basis of such presumptions alone. In Perak Asara Yosin, Daf Pei Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara. Maseh be'isha shebasu shalayim betinok murkav la'afsefa. Woman comes into Jerusalem, she's got a child riding on her shoulder, right? Vihigdilatu, and she raised him, and then uva aleha, and then he had intercourse with her, vehevium levezdim, uskalum, and they gave him skila for incest, for gilui raos. Why? Lo mipnei shebanav vadai. Not because they knew that it was Vadai, her son. Mishnah says, Ela mipnei shekaruch achareha. The child's practice of tagging after the woman was presumably the behavior of a child with its mother, right? A child's bound to its mother, right? When is a child obligated for sukkah?
When it's no longer bound to its mother. When it's no longer mechan, when it's no longer...
Actually, when it wakes up in the night and doesn't call Ima.
Which would imply it's not bound to
right. That's the marsh here, right? When it's a cut in, obligated in Nanui, Mishio Dei and Nane, right? Which means that three quarters of the Shlifei Tzibor that I see, if they're under Bar Mitzvah age, you're probably not Chayav in Nanui, because they don't know how to do it. Right? Okay, so we can see a child's bound to its mother, and the minhav, the behavior of the child, was enough to create the legal presumption of maternity. Right? And on this presumption alone, these people were executed. They were subject to the death penalty for incest. So chazaka is a pretty powerful thing. Right? By the way, if you have a chance, look at the Rambam's Lashon in the first parak of Isurei Bia. Halacha Chav. Generally, you'll have these sources beforehand. I started Xeroxing them when I ran it on time. Misha Huchzach Sh'ar Basar, Sh'er Basar, Donim Bo Al Piyach HaZakar.
Afalpisha ain sham raya brura shizekaro. Somebody who is muhsak, there's a presumption, people know, everybody knows that's the case, as being related, you can apply the laws of chazaka, even though there's no explicit proof that they're related. After citing the Maisa, then he cites the Maisa from Asara Yuchsin that I told you about, the child. The Rambam brings a formidable proof from the Yerushalmi for this, that we do this. Raya l'din zeh, masha dana Torah, v'mekalel aviv umake aviv, sheyumas, uminayin lanu raya bruya shezeh aviv. Ela b'chazaka. Kach she'ar krovi b'chazaka. Paternity cannot be known with certainty. I have a son who looks a lot like me, but it could be a major coincidence. He always says to people that he looks like me. He always says, at least Baruch Hashem have my health. Right? Paternity cannot be known with certainty except by one person, the woman who gave birth to the baby. I want to be the only Rosh Hashivi here who mentions the name Amber Fry. So I want to say, maybe she doesn't know. If she were pregnant, she wouldn't know who the baby is. But most snuos would know who the baby is, who the father is. But they're the only ones that would know in a platonic sense, in an epistemological sense. Not that they believe and they have very strong reasons for believing, but that they actually know. They're justified in the sense. Okay? Nevertheless, the Rambam says, the Torah establishes the death penalty for certain abuses of one's father. The relationship of father to child, then, is the paradigmatic relationship, the Rambam says, for all familiar relations, insofar as it rests entirely on chazaka, our concept from Yisur HaHetzer. In the Chasam Sofer's words here, Shezeh haya davar shemei olam lo ra'inu, v'lo yadanu shekach haya, elo mikoach, Cheskas isnagusam anudanim shekafu. Right? Believe it or not, hard to believe, but I have no actual proof that I'm a Kohen. People will be shocked by that. Who could be more of a Kohen than I am? Right? I'm just Mutzach to be Kohen. Right? People treat me like a Kohen, so I must be a Kohen. Go up to Dukkah, I must be a Kohen. The reason the Yerushalmi uses paternity as the paradigm is because it is perforce known only with certainty by that one person. Only she knows if she's been with no other man. We're going to leave the admissibility of DNA testing to my Rebbe Rav Tendlishti, and not for me to do. The only basis for the Torah setting the death penalty must be the force of chazaka. In the course of your lifelong study of Yoredei, you're going to encounter numerous situations in which halacha recognizes the force of legal presumptions, both le'esor u'lahadir. It's not a question of chumra. What the Rambam is saying is that me'ikar hadin, the Torah recognizes the force of chazaka, of legal presumption. Because by definition, by saying mikmaket Avi, most yumas, it's saying by definition, it has to involve chazaka. It's not a chumra. Okay? Ikar din. Agav orfa. Let's note that the Rambam Shita is in the application of chazaka and the related notion of rov is much more nuanced than I presented it here. Morena Rabbeinu Rav Shechter Shlita has an important analysis of the Rambam's approach in Eretz Tzvi. It's in Siman Lamed Zayin, Ayin Shah. The Kitzur, the Rambam seems to exclude Rove, the Kol Shekain Chazaka, as a rationale for applying the death penalty, apparently contradicting himself in the Gemara in Kedushin we just discussed. It's in Perek Tesvav Miyokos Yisurei Bia, Halacha Chav Zayin. Yireli, Shekol Medina Sheyesh Bashifa, Ogoya, Haruya Lele, Hoyo Basufi Haninsa Sham Safek Goy O Safek Eved Kisheyisa Hagiores Kamosha Marnu Haresa Safek Ashes Ish
Babala apatur she ain't hargim me something. So Rambam says, ain't hargim me something. We don't, you know, otherwise, how can you ever marry Gioris? We never know whether or not they're HSC or not, right? Okay? The Rambam writes that the only remedy for people of questionable birth is to marry Geiri. She may indeed be a suffix HSC ish, but nevertheless, he's talked her from the death penalty because we don't execute without firm information. So while this isn't, you know, our primary focus today, I want to call attention to Rav Schechter's insightful resolution because it fits quite nicely with the Hasam Sofer here. As we're going to shortly see in the sugya here in Fulin, the Gemara does suggest that we do execute al pi rov. The Shav Shmaisa, Rav Schechter notes, explains the Rambam's exclusion of the death penalty in cases of safek, like the ones in which we apply rov and chazaka, because the Torah says, al pi shnayim eidim yumas hames. Only full, complete eidus, the Torah is saying, can effect capital punishment. Any beirur, Rav Schechter says, that is inferior in certainty to complete eidus is disqualified. So now how can the Rambam say this when he applies chazaka in the halakha that we discussed earlier? So Rav Schechter writes, Umeyata yesh lomar, the shapir nicha shitas a Rambam, the had mema'itan mikra, the alpi shnayim eidim yumasameis, the lo mahani ruba b'chazaka, the dine nefashos, hainu dafka b'makom shetzrichim levarer eza matzah, the eifshar levarero al yedei ruba b'chazaka, ela al yedei eidim. Let me explain. Eidim testify as to acts, not presumptions about human behavior. Rav Schechter is devolving. That's you should really, it's worth looking into. Okay? The occurrence of a particular maisa can only be established by eyewitnesses. Right? To say Ploni killed Almoni, right? To say Reuven killed Shimon. You can only establish that by having witnesses. Right? We do not establish that a particular act was committed by a particular individual through plain probability. Only two eyewitnesses can establish that Reuven killed Shimon Rachmanav Yitzchak. On the other hand, we can consider the kedushin of a girl at least 3 years and a day valid, and exact the death penalty for adultery from someone other than her husband who was intercourse with her. This, even though we do not know for certain that she's an Ilonis, right? Here, we do apply the probabilities, since after we established that there was a Maisa Bia for which you need Adim, there's no Maisa to which Adim must attest to establish the probability that she's not an Ilonis. Chazaka Barov makes statements about the general Metzias that pertains, not specific acts. Thank you, Russia. Now, this is to be distinguished from another variety of chazaka. When something's happened three times, and therefore established the precedent, the paradigm, the shor muad, right? This is not the kind of chazaka with which we're concerned here, although Achronim argue that they're conceptually related, but ain't kan makam la'arim. Okay? Now, some chazakas, noted in Shas, make presumptions about human behavior that may no longer be accurate. How do we treat such chazakas? Are they, let me teach you a new form. Everybody will learn to be a pseudo-intellectual in this year. Through all the great pseudo-intellectual phrases. Are they legal formalisms? That means it's a law and it stands whether or not the reason is still there anymore. Meaning, does the fact of their statement make them law independent of the reason they were advanced? Okay? On the one hand, by the way, we know that gezeros remain in force independent of the reasons for which they were enacted by Chazal. The gezera has an independent legal existence, right? That is distinct from the Bezdin's underlying rationale. In fact, as we'll see, Be'ezos Hashem, when we discuss Kvinos Akum, Chazal were wont to suppress the reason for gezera until the practice had taken hold among Bnei Yisrael. They were fully aware of people's tendency to interpret Asteh Lecha Rav as make yourself your own remedy.
Lest the community reject the practical reason behind the Gezerah, Chazal withheld publication of the reason until such time as the new behavior was likely to be the norm. The Chasam Sofer comments, though, that all Chazakas were not created to be equal. You'll find this on the Sugi info in the Chasam Sofer, if you want to look at it. In his words, Hakol Lithi Ha'inyan V'Haminhag. And he presents two Chazakas that are no longer operative. Ein Isha Me'iza B'Fnei Bala. A woman will not brazenly lie in front of her husband when she knows he knows the truth. So the Gemara quotes Rav Hamnuna in the second paragraph of Ksubas, Tafez Amabez. Ha'isha she'amra lebala, geirashtani, nemenes. A woman says in front of her husband, you divorced me. We believe her. She'e hazoke ein isha me'iza paneha b'fnei bala. But we live in a different time than the Gemara. So the Ramah in Sifez, Eben Ezer, Siman Yud Zayin, Sifez, substantiates the Chasam Sofer's observation. Here's what he says. The context is the other place in Shas where this chazak appears. It's the ninth perk of Gittin, Pei Tes Amit Beis, which related to his contemporary Rav Hamnuna Sheet that we just described. Eishes Isha, Pashta Yada, Bekibla Kiddusha, Me'ahar Me'akeh, Mikudeshes, Midrav Hamnuna, because the woman wouldn't be Me'izah. Okay? Namely, it's as if she's making the same claim that Rav Hamnuna accepted, right? Geirashtani. By accepting the kiddushin of another person, she's in effect making the statement that her first husband divorced her and we believe her. The same legal presumption that a woman would not brazenly lie in front of her husband would apply. I didn't say that's a lot of you.
Well, no. Well, I was about to ask, because by Hilchot Nida, we use that same assumption and Shulchan.
Are you bucking for a better grade?
No.
Nida?
No, because this doesn't.
Okay.
So we use the same assumption. I don't recall it being kind of rejected at certain places. We say if she's doing certain things, so we're going to automatically assume that she's not going to lie to her husband. But it would fall under the same category because she could be brazenly lying to her husband, saying I'm a nida for X.
Okay. Well, here we say that this particular chazaka that she wouldn't be meiza poneha is just in that. Okay. Could be maize, but now another thing. But they, Rav Hamnuna, had a presumption that this kind of behavior took place. But check out the Ramah in Eben Ezer there that I cited to you. The Yesh Omrim, the Dizmana Zed, and the Fishay Chutzpah Uprisusa. Right? Must have lived in our day. Eina Nemenes, Ela Lachumra, the Isra Azaka, the Eina Mehiza.
Where's the Ramah again?
It's in Eben Ezer. The reference I have in my notes somewhere, it's for Rav Schechter, I know off the top of my head exactly where it is, but it's Siman Yud Zayin, deep base.
There in Gezer is also that, it's not like you can make a categorical rule that, you know, Batal HaTam Batal Gezer or Batal HaTam Batal Chazaka, because there are exceptions.
I mean, right.
And even the Gezer case, there are multiple instances where even though the Mishnah will give a Gemara will give a reason for it, somebody's journal says no longer shaykh nowadays for whatever reason, so you can't say across the board in either case that you can, you know, generally speaking, but this may just be accepting to the rules.
Well, we're going to have to investigate that at some point, because we're going to want to understand what kind of gezeiras remain in effect and which ones don't.
Right.
And particularly interesting because of non-halachic or non-orthodox approaches to halacha, which I'm going to lay out something here. I want to make a comment about that. As a matter of fact, because I think this is one where they don't understand.
I'm just confused, but I don't understand what the chiddush of Chasam Sofer is. I mean, the way you framed the discussion was generally we say batal hatam lo batal gezeir. The shaila is, do we say batal hatam lo batal chazaka? Right. That was the question. So the Chasam Sofer said each one there are the context does play a role. That's what the Ramah is saying.
Right.
But is that a general rule? You're just saying in this specific case.
No, he says that I'm trying to establish that it does. That it's a general rule according to the Chasam Sofer.
The Chasam Sofer, right.
So I want to say that, and by the way, you'll find this in the Igros Moshe. We have a Chazaka, Eina Damo Seh, Bilas So, Bilas Nus, right? So we say, but does that hold today? In our day? I mean, why did we cancel? I wanted to have a big Tu B'Av celebration in North America, but there was one psula, and she lived in Memphis, right? She couldn't come in. The fact of the matter is, today we live in a time of great pritzusa, right?
But the Rambam says that, right? The Rambam says that only applies for kasherim.
Ah, so therefore, Reb Moshe then found a way to be matir, where you had people that would live together in common law, which
right.
would say in other times it would say they would need shibayesh yishish. Because chazaka ain't a damas abilus abilus news. And he says that chazaka doesn't apply to these people.
No, but I'm saying, but that's based already on the Rambam's notion. He worked the kasherim into the chazaka. He said the chazaka of ain't a damas abilus abilus news only works for kasherim.
Absolutely.
So I'm
absolutely.
Saying, it's not
you
like
redefine. So I can do that with gezerah too. So I can say that the gezerah here, and by the way, you have posted.
Yeah, that's the
Eretz Yisrael
right,
posting.
Right.
You say the following. So say there's a gezerah not to take medicine with Shabbos.
Right.
Shema, you write.
Right.
Okay. So you have this gezerah. So I could say that, as some Eretz Yisrael posting say, right, that gezerah applies to the kind of medicines that are made in a pharmacy. Right? But just because we call patent medicines that are made on an assembly line medicine doesn't mean that they're the same kind of medicine and that the gezerah never applied to those kind of medicines. Right? So that's the easiest strategy for taking the teeth out of the gezerah, to say that the gezerah was chal only on the specific circumstances and that some of the conditions then for the gezerah don't apply. What I'm trying to say here, though, is that what the Chasam Sofer is saying is that the chazaka, which is stated as halacha, still is dependent upon human behavior. Okay? Now, so therefore he says, in the time of the Ramah, when standards have declined, the chazaka doesn't apply. But let's analyze it carefully. So as long as you brought it up, let's analyze it carefully. Lachumra, we still have the fact of the Gemara citation of Rav Huna and Rav Hamnuna. We cannot rely on the chazak as a matir, given its lack of foundation in real-world behavior. On the other hand, we cannot simply ignore the chazak and social circumstances have changed to allow formerly forbidden acts without any discrimination. Okay? So in other words, the chazakah pertains, let me say it legally or logically, for acts of omission. Namely, we desist from doing what we might otherwise allow because of the fact of the Gemara citation of the chazakah. On the other hand, we cannot commit an act that would be forbidden if a chazakah did not apply, since we know in fact that it no longer pertains. Okay? Right? That's my understanding. So the Chasam Sofer's observation, and you should look at it. Ayin Sham, by the way, doesn't mean the end of the quotation. Actually, it's Tzivui that means Ayin Sham. Go look there, right? So I was surprised to discover that. Now, I always said Ayin Sham, and it's just Ayin Sham. It means like quotation marks. So it's finished. Icon Lashona. Now that's Icon Lashona. Ayin Sham is Tzivui. Go be my Ayin. So the Chasam Sofer's observation that the application of legal presumptions about human behavior depends on historical circumstance is exemplified by the comment of the Ramah here. I know, by the way, so I say that the Ramah is in concert with the Chasam Sofer, the way I read it. I know, by the way, that the Ramah takes precisely the opposite approach of some who advocate then liberalization of halakha. They argue that a particular practice is already permitted, we certainly shouldn't be looking for ways to forbid it. If circumstances have changed, though, they do propose eliminating prohibitions to reflect the new situation. So this is, in fact, the opposite of the Ramah's approach, if you think about it, right? They want to recognize behavioral change lakula, but not lakumra, ulam ein kan makom lahari. Okay? Returning to our subject, how is the chazaka of legal presumption related to the first variety of chazaka, namely, establishing the status of an animal according to the state from which we presume it began? I think probably from the way that I asked the question, I've already suggested my preferred answer. The animal begins its life in a state of Isur. Like we said, Charei Asur, Mishumei Reminachai, in Rashi's words. We cannot, of course, cut off the limb of a living animal, salt it, cook it, and then eat it. Say Reminachai. This is what Rav Huna means by Behema Bechaya Becheskas Isur Omedes, according to Rashi's word. Right? And this, you know, and we did the Rashba. We don't need to go any further in that. Okay? Now, let's flip a little bit ahead. Some of this I'm going to do, some of this I'll just ask you to do. By the way, as I said, for those of you who got here later, I do no guessing games. Here's the way we do behemoths. I give you written behemoths. You can go home, discuss them with Arusa, take out your sparring, take out your notes, and write them up. You give them to me, and I'll make sure they're okay. I'll hand them into the office. Then you study them, and I will ask you exactly those questions orally. Okay? Guess what? You wind up preparing a lot more, right? It's just that you have no nervousness. You know when you know it. Okay? It's not supposed to be, if you already got here and they let you in this chabur, then believe me, you're not going to have a problem. Okay? I know you're not going to have a problem. Okay? All right? Now, the Gemara asks, let's find it on, and I'm going to, I'll finish soon, okay? So I know this is hard the first time. The Gemara asks on, is it Yud Amud Aleph? Minaha Milsa Damur Rabbanan Okei Milsa Akhaiske. What's the scriptural source, or Yud Aleph, sorry, it's on Yud Aleph. What's the scriptural source for maintaining a legal object in its original legal status? Okay? Why are we okay milsa achezke, according to its chazaka? And the example that they give there, as you'll see in the sugya when you do it, the example that they give there is the bayis hamenuga, right? The house where you have saras on the wall. Kohen can't necessarily see it the whole time, but when he leaves, he assumes it hasn't changed, closes the door, and the house becomes musgar. Okay? Then further on, after they suggest a whole bunch of different sources for chazaka, the Gemara asks another question. Mina ha-milsa damur rabbanan zil basar ruba, and that's what we're going to look at next time. What's the scriptural source for following the majority? Okay. First the Gemara says, Mina ha-milsa damur rabbanan okay milsa achezke, but it says zil basar ruba. The language, okay, milsa, acheske, to me, implies an act of omission. Leave it alone. Leave it as it is. Let it stand on its chazaka. It's my finish. It's a sheva al tasa. Don't alter the legal status. Leave things the way they are. Actually, I think it's a Tasa Sofer's observation, now that I recall. The language, zeal basar ruba, go after the majority, implies an act of commission, an act of change. And by the way, this philological observation is, in fact, also in the Chasam Sofer.
Is this Chasam Sofer on Kohen?
Yeah. Okay, right on test. Well, that's so good. Okay? V'chan mairei midavar shara'inu kenu, umusabkinan dilma nishtane me'az ve'ad ata, v'lo shaya azlinan basar chazaka elav mok me'lea chazka, chazka v'maisa. I think he's making the same observation I am. Leave it alone. Let it rest. Let it rest the way it is. But zil basar ruba, we actually matir, we actually do things al pi rov. The Gemara cites the source for Parshas Mitzora, the Inyan Saras Abayis. And let me give you some background here. When B'nai Yisrael reach Eretz Yisrael, the laws of Saras expand to apply not only to a person, to clothing, but also to houses. So upon spotting a discoloration on the wall of his home, the Baal Bais comes to a Kohen and he says, Kinega nira li b'bais. Note the precision of the Torah's language, Kinega. He doesn't declare it to be a nega, but it says something that looks Kinega, like a nega, it's on the wall of my house. Only the Kohen can declare it to be a nega tzaras. The color must be just so, and it must be at least a grease the size of a large bean, and the essence of the proof is that the Kohen cannot close off the house without leaving. Dilma ad nafi the asa batzar le shiura. Maybe while he was going out, the shiur got smaller and it was already not saras. So since the Torah makes no allowance for the case where he can't confirm the size of the discoloration, his kibris, la mishum damrinan okay apeske, right? And Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, you'll find, doesn't find the proof of Chazaka very compelling, and he asks a question about it, and whatever, and we decide in the end that he doesn't hold from that you should establish things according to Chazaka. Okay? Next time, I want to start on the section that you can do the rest of that Gemara. I'll actually give you questions, so you know the Chazara, that you can know that you know that. Okay? You know that you know that Sukkah. Okay? That will constitute, if you think about it then, three dapim, three of the 40 dapim of Fulin, so you're already you know, 7.5% of the way through, or the full endowment. Okay, so if you do that, it's a very, very good sugya. Okay, now, so what I'm interested in next time, which I was going to do now, but I'm losing my voice, and it's been a long first session for you. I'm going to do rove. Okay, I'm going to talk about how we follow a rove and what kind of rove there is, and then what is the difference between chazaka and rove. And what's really the conceptual basis for following the rove? And in particular, I'm interested in this. Is it a hanhaga, to use the words of Shamar Yosher, or a beirur? Is it just a logical device, or is it a law? Is it just gezeiros hakasim, that the Torah says, follow the rove? You'll find out in the sugya that the Gemara says, acharei rabim lahatos. We follow the rove. Right? We learn from Sanhedrin. Right? So we follow the rove. So that's going to be that Mina Torah, most of the time, unless there's an inyan of tam, because the tam can eat her, most of the time, Mina Torah, if we have Iser mixed into Heter, if the majority of the mixture is Heter, it'll be Mutter Mina Torah. Okay? Most of the time. Okay? Now, if that's, I want to understand what that means. Is that just a logical thing that, you know, how does it work? Is that a beirur or is it a hanhaga? Is it a law or is it really a logical device? Hazaka, is it a beirur or is it a hanhaga? When the Gemara says in Kedushin that rove is adif mi chazaka, why is that? That a rove is stronger than chazaka, why is that? And I want to know then, I want to have an answer to the Tosis question. If I already proved chazaka, and rove is stronger than a chazaka, then why do I need a source for rove? Why does the Gemara then ask for rove? That's the closest question. I want to understand how rove works. It's a very, very basic concept around which all of Yisur v'Heter talk about. We're going to follow the status of the majority of the mixture. Okay? Now, generally we'll do sugyas on whatever sugyas we have to do, we'll generally do on Wednesday, and we'll generally do Torah Shulchan Aruch on Sunday. But what I'd like you to do is bring the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah Shulchan Aruch, with you. If you're using two separate volumes, please bring them both. Okay? So we're gonna look in Tzadi Ches already a little bit on Sunday, God willing. So we're gonna finish this particular sugya, then we're gonna look at sugya in Fulin. The beginning on has in Kol HaBasar and Tipas Chala Shenafla today, we're going to look to learn the inyan of Tam Ki Ikar. That if I don't have to have the full thing there, if I just have its flavor, that also is awesome.
So you should prepare for Sunday with Sadi Chas, or we should do.
Yeah, so I would look at the section. What I'd like you to do is look at Tosu's question on why we ask for a source for Rove, if we already know that. And then look in the Rashba and Tosus Arosh on that same question. And you'll see they say two different, like they can't understand each other. They're talking, they have each has a different Svara Chitzoma. Okay? They're talking across purposes. And that'll help us understand Rove. Then our job is going to be to understand how Rove works. And then after we understand how Rove works, we'll get the other Indian, and that's Tom. Then we fly a little bit through Shulchan Aruch and Tur, but we have a great conceptual basis. We're going to do also sugya in. We're going to do a little bit. I'm going to in Mem Gimel in Elu Ovrin in Safi on Tom Ki Ikar, what the sources for it are. We're going to need to know that because it's going to come up constantly in the Shach and the Taz. Okay. Now switch off and let me just.